Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, and you're very welcome to this week's episode of the Group Chat Podcast from Virgin Media News. I am political correspondent Gavin Riley, joined in studio by news correspondent Zara King. Zara, hello.
How are you?
And joined from the great state of Georgia by news correspondent Richard Chambers. Richard, how are you? And tell us, first of all, what exactly are you doing there?
Hi.
I'm having a great time is what I'm doing. We drove in here this morning from Jacksonville in Florida. We've had about 8 or 9 hours of a drive since Joe Biden's rally for the midterm elections in Miami yesterday. So we're here in the city, of Richmond Hill. You'll see people in the background, if people are watching this on TV, they're setting up a rally here for Herschel Walker, who's a Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate here in Georgia. Very much endorsed by Donald Trump. You'll see a lot of Trump flags in the background there, a lot of MAGA, a lot of Make America Great Again, 2020, Stop the Steal stuff. So that's the kind of vibe we're at the moment here, guys.
Let's bring it back.
Midterm elections are on. We're covering it across the states for the next while.
Yeah, let's bring it back to square one, Richard, because what people were seeing, because you've been doing your usual Instagram Q&As, illuminating as they always are at News Chambers' Instagram account. And one of the questions you've been getting and you're covering is, sorry, what are these elections? I didn't know there was elections coming up. So just bring us back to square one as to the elections you're actually covering.
Yeah, so this is probably the most important midterm elections in recent US history. It is probably one of the most important elections, full stop, in recent US history. So every 2 years in the middle of a presidential term, you have the midterm election. So you'll have all of the seats in the House of Representatives are up for election every 2 years, and about a third of the seats in the Senate. Now, people might have heard that over the last couple of years, Joe Biden, since he became president, has had some issues getting some of his key legislation, whether that be about things like climate change or infrastructure, through Congress, because he's blocked, despite having a majority in both houses of Congress, by having very, very slim majorities. So what's actually likely to happen now is that the Democratic majority in both houses is under threat. He's very much likely to lose the House of Representatives by a good, good margin. And you're going to have a lot of people who are standing for election for the Republican Party, who denied that Joe Biden won the 2020 election, who believe that Donald Trump is lawfully should be the president of the United States. You have a lot of people who will have key positions of power, both in Washington in terms of able to set the agenda and the legislation, but also will be able to influence how the 2024 presidential election does get on. Also, you have, of course, people will have seen what happened to Nancy Pelosi's husband, the hammer attack there, effectively an attempted murder and attempted assassination, really, on the Speaker of the House of Representatives. There is a threat of violence which has been hanging all the way over this. There's been intimidation, there's been conspiracy theories, really a huge level of tension across America around these elections, which effectively, you know, democracy is on the line here in the United States. You know, the undermining of key institutions and how things are done has really set in since January 6th of 2020. And that's really what this election is all about.
So for people who, you know, don't follow the whole thing and then who are like, this is why they didn't know that there was elections going on, and they'd be forgiven for thinking that there weren't any, because as far as they know, it's always just presidential elections. It's Biden now, could be Trump again in 2 years' time. But it sounds like from what you're saying that in a weird way, Donald Trump is kind of on the ballot paper.
Oh, 100% he is. He's been doing rallies absolutely everywhere. We're going to one next week. He's effectively, his endorsement matters more than anything else to Republican candidates. So Herschel Walker here, who's going to be setting up his bus tour, is going to be rolling in here. He's a former American football star here at the University of Georgia. He was in the NFL as well, handpicked by Donald Trump. He is a very much a MAGA Republican. He is an anti-abortionist, despite the fact that there's been allegations that he paid and pressurized two women to have abortions of children that he fathered. He denies that, of course. He's also had a patchy track record in terms of telling the truth about things like his educational history, whether or not he works for law enforcement or received training for the FBI. So he's an interesting character, but Donald Trump himself is very much at the center of absolutely everything. Both in the Democratic side, people are trying to say, well, we're protecting democracy. We're electing people to make sure that American democracy isn't dragged into an extremism and into fascism, into conspiratorial theories, while people on the Republican side are effectively saying, we want to build the bridge for Donald Trump to run again in 2024. And that's exactly what people like the supporters of Herschel Walker setting up here behind me with their American flags and whatnot. That's kind of what is key and at stake for them really here as well. But I mean, the abortion issue I mentioned there briefly, that's obviously huge here as well. So like, the Supreme, people remember we talked about this in the podcast before, the Supreme Court effectively removed the constitutional right to abortion. If the Republicans win the House and the Senate, they can effectively put a nationwide state ban on abortion, which would be really an incredible change of things. Just 50 years of legal precedent thrown out the window. Even things like Ukraine, whether or not Ukraine can sustain itself in a war against Russia, hugely dependent on whether Congress will pass votes in terms of the budget and military support. Obviously, billions and billions and billions of dollars have been authorized by the US government at that point. The Republicans saying effectively the blank check stops if they win both houses. So this has huge ramifications for absolutely everything around the world, including democracy, including Ukraine, including women's right to choose in terms of abortion too.
And Richard, I want to go back to just you touch on there, the tensions that are on the ground there in America. This is a really critical turning point. I know, for example, the Commission for the Protection of Journalists was saying that they were issuing advice to journalists working on the ground in the States because of those tensions. Are you seeing that being borne out on the ground? Is there some level of anger and frustration towards the media there?
A lot of booing. We're at Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis is the governor of Florida. Some are tipping him to be the 2024 Republican nominee. He's actually in a bit of a rivalry with Donald Trump. They hate each other, effectively, because they're both going to be seeking to be the Republican nominee for president in 2024. So Trump's holding a rally in Florida next week. He didn't invite Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis holding his own rally. He's very much, you know, all of the key characteristics of Donald Trump are with Ron DeSantis, including those attacks on the media, the fake news media, the mainstream media. We were sitting through a rally of his in Ave Maria, Florida, a very interesting place to tell you about in a little bit, but a lot of booing and jeering and very much anti-media vibes. We ourselves here, wherever we say we're from Ireland, people are kind of grand with us, really. Like, you know, we were over here a few minutes ago chatting to Team Herschel Walker, and they were like, oh, do you know Shane Lowry and do you know Rory McIlroy? And it's like, it was one of those things where you're like, I'm Irish, so, and I don't want to make it feel like Ireland's a village, but I was like, yeah, I've met both of them multiple times, yes. Yeah. So, damn, they got us there. But no, I think people have been quite welcoming. But there is absolutely an undercurrent of it. We were chatting to actually some media crews in Florida who were like, they actually were attending. There's a Proud Boys event. You know, people might have heard of that far-right militia group who are becoming, you know, towards the mainstream almost of the Republican Party. They were like, we had to have security guards going down to that. That's a really, really tense scene. And I think we're probably going to see more. We're here until the results are in. Like, we're trying to get a pulse check on what's actually happening to America, the America that we knew even 10 years ago, a very, very different place now. And I think that the attacks in the media and intimidation of the media, that's going to be a hallmark, really, of what we're going to see, I think.
You just mentioned the town of Ave Maria. This was fascinating rabbit hole that you sent me down after you posted on Instagram that you were there. Tell us about the town of Ave Maria. And also, is that where you met the Irish publican that you have a clip that you want to play us as well?
Ave Maria, Florida. So we wanted to go to a Ron DeSantis event, and we saw that there was one called Faith, Freedom and Family in Ave Maria, Florida. And I was like, that's a nice name for a town. I wonder what the story is with that. And it was at a place called the Ave Maria University. So I was like, I'm going to hit the old Google machine. Actually, my brother tipped me off on this. He says, you should check out the story about Ave Maria. And I was like, we were, myself and Owen Kelly, our camera operator, we were driving from Miami out to Ave Maria. And through the Everglades, so it's like hours and hours of nothingness. So I had plenty of time to get onto Wikipedia. Ave Maria, Florida was set up in the year 2005. It's a city, it's basically like a Lego town, I would say. It's very fake looking. It has a water park, maybe holy water. It's a conservative Catholic outpost, basically, set up to push Catholic values. It has a Catholic university in the middle of it. It was set up in 2005. The guy who set it up was actually Tom Monahan, who was the founder of Domino's Pizza. So The pizza money went to good use and was put towards, you know, saving the souls of Americans around the world. That's really what they actually see it as, their mission. We heard from like a lot of the locals there who were like, we are trying to save the soul of America. We met an old woman, from Banagher in County Offaly. She moved here 57 years ago. She's like, Banagher, Ave Maria reminds me of Banagher 57 years ago. She says Ireland is damned to hell for what social changes we've seen in our country over the last number of years. She's an interesting views on that. But in terms of actually Irish people, it's actually a good touching point for how things have changed in America. We met in Palm Beach, just across the road from Mar-a-Lago, Donald Trump's resort there, a publican called Morris Costigan. He's originally from County Cork. He's been here for 3 decades. He's basically banned political chat at his pub because of the extremism that's set in. Now, he's not a Democrat, he's not a Republican, but he basically says that he's very much afraid of what's happening in the United States. Himself and his wife have had conversations about the fact that they might actually have to leave the country where they've set down roots, where they have family, because of that level of extremism, fascism as he calls it, which is seeping in.
I strongly discourage people from talking politics in here, because it's so easy you can take a nasty turn. I have friends that I've been friends with for 30 years who shock me at times with some of their attitudes. I suppose that I never realised, whether they be racist or extreme on either side. And it's hatred has become encouraged.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the last president, without doubt, he encouraged and promoted hatred. I'm saying that as very much an independent. I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. But, and he stoked hatred and stoked people's fears, which unfortunately, in history in the past, I mean, that's what Hitler did, that's what Mussolini did, and so on.
Yeah, so I think that's actually what a lot of people in, you know, the middle of America, and Republicans, former old school Republicans, really feel that they're, you know, the country is being lost, that democracy, the country which has been a beacon of democracy in their view around the world, is really, you know, falling down into the abyss at this point. So that's what we're going to be looking at over the next week in a bit, really. We'll be speaking to some very interesting people. Sean Spicer, Mick Mulvaney, some key Irish Americans in the Trump administration. Speaking to, we spoke to an incredible woman, Zoe Weisserman. She's only 16 years of old. She's a survivor of the Parkland shooting. So her views really on what is at stake in terms of gun control in the States. And also some of the police officers who were attacked and who were basically barely escaped with their lives on January 6th. They basically say that they were defending as a democracy that day, so to see what their views are on the fact that nothing has really changed, if anything it's gotten worse since that day, will be really, really interesting. So we hope to bring you some of that over the next number of days ahead.
And Richard, we love when you bring us a bit behind the scenes. I mean, yourself and owner kind of road tripping across America together, what's it been like? Are you a lot of driving involved in this trip?
Christ, it's driving and driving and driving. We're on the I-95 for about a day. It's one of the longest motorways in the world. It's just motorways and Wendy's. Eating has not been healthy, I would say. I've also sunburnt a bit. What's the polite word for it? My posterior is numb from the driving, I would say, from saddle sore, basically, at this point. But it's been great. The sunburn isn't great. It's so hot and humid. It's like we're in, this is the deep south, the deep, deep, deep south.
Yeah.
So, muggy is the way through. But it's been great. We've met some incredible people so far. And we'll bring you some more tidbits from behind the scenes as we go.
Okay, well, shout out to Owen Kelly for sharing his burden of the driving. Shout out to your brother for giving you the tip off about Ave Maria. We're going to have Owen on some other week to tell us all the stories that you aren't able to tell us about how bad a passenger you are in future times. All of Richard's coverage, I'm sure, will be very much worth watching on Virgin Media News over the coming days. Before we wrap up part one, there's been a more domestic story. It's one of those ongoing stories domestically, Zara, it seems now for years, and unfortunately reached a very sad note in the last couple of days with the passing of one of the major protagonists in it. That, of course, being the story of cervical check and the death of Lindsay Bennett.
Yeah, so look, people will have seen this in the last week, sadly. The death of Lindsay Bennett came quite suddenly, really, in the end. I suppose people, when they heard the news, were devastated. Lindsay Bennett, a young mother, 34, same age as me, a mother of two children. And look, you know, we will get back to this in the coming weeks, and there's a discussion to be had in terms of cervical check, in terms of the 221 plus group and where those women are now and their families and what needs to be done and what remains outstanding. And certainly a conversation we will have in the next week or two. But for now, we wanted to take a moment to listen back to an interview that Lindsay gave to Ireland AM. We'll leave the final words of part one to Lindsay.
To have the time with your two daughters, Hayley and Zoe, who are the most important things in your life. And that does involve you trying to do things that they aren't aware of.
Yeah.
That you don't want them to see aspects of your treatment, I'm assuming.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I get up 5:30 to 7. I do 2 hours every morning before Hayley wakes up on my machines in my little treatment room that I have before she gets up, just to not have her being like, oh, yeah, mammy's got cancer and of course she's doing her machines, just to not be in her face with it. And then with Zoe, Zoe decided that she wanted to give sleeping at school a shot. And so that's, I'm delighted for her that she's loving being 25 minutes up the road.
She's in boarding school.
In boarding school,
the one,
yeah,
you went to.
The one I went to, yes. And it's only 25 minutes from her house, but like that, she doesn't see the rush into hospital. She doesn't see me doing my machines. And she's also getting into a routine where I'm not in her life every day.
Oh, Lindsay, that's heartbreaking.
Because I remember last, when you're here, you had them both with you as well. Yeah. And for Hayley, who's only 8, you know, are you very honest with her about it? Because, you know, that morning she knew exactly what was going on, but it must be so difficult.
Yeah, I've been so honest. I've been so honest with them from the start, but in the most gentle way that I could. Like, she was going to her dad's there 2 weekends ago, and she was going out the door and she was hugging me goodbye, and I knew she was in great form, and she just turned around and goes, I hope you don't die. Goodbye. And she ran out the door, and it literally, like, it broke my heart. And I was just like, it's just so plain on her mind. So that's why I've got in touch with a play therapist to bring the kids, or bring her back again, because she's sleeping in my bed at night and stuff now. And, you know, she realises mammies do die. And when she was like really upset about it, I turned around and I said, look, nobody knows when they have to go to heaven. And I said, and I can't promise you how long I'm going to be here. I said, the only thing is that I can promise you is that I am trying my best. I said, that's why mammy's now going to Germany. Like, she went to Mexico. And I said, look, I said, I've already got lots of extra time that wasn't expected. And she was like, okay, okay. And she was happy with that, but she's still sleeping in my bed at night now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Richard has had to run off and a credit for that Herschel Walker rally. Not unconvinced that by the time we see him again in a few minutes' time, he will have been drafted as president of United States.
Listen, he might be leaving us.
Or at the very least, like, a write-in candidate for Congress in Georgia or something. In the meantime...
Wouldn't have known Kelly either now.
Own Kelly get elected anywhere. Own Kelly is quite the fella.
Yeah. Two Lights Kelly, we call Own Kelly. Just for this bit of insider trading. Own Kelly, as a cameraman, will offer you two lights, which I'm going to be honest with you.
I mean, Zara's always lovely on camera, but if ever you see Zara looking particularly beautifully lit on camera, there's a fair chance it's Own Kelly.
Or because Mark he does. Armstrong, to be fair, as well.
Or Oisín Moore from time to time can also do it as well.
They're all bloody brilliant.
They all have lovely bottoms. While Richard is off to go and do that or get drafted for public office, let's talk about the unlikely news story of the week, which is the absence of livestock outside of the home of the Lord Mayor.
Yeah. So
in Dublin.
Okay, well, first of all, have you been to a crib with livestock?
I have been to that crib.
You've been to that crib
for the last 4 or 5 years before I had children to bring. Although, certainly since I've had children, I've brought them to that crib outside the Mansion House. But it is worth bearing in mind that it's a crib which has only been in place since, I think, 1995 is the first year that it's there. Mm. So it's not one of those things where, you know, people will be going to their grandparents now and saying, oh, the crib, and they'll say, oh, I was brought to that when I was your age. It's a fairly modern phenomenon. Either way,
being brought to a crib is a very 90s child Christmas experience, isn't it?
I mean, it probably is.
My grandparents used to bring us to a crib in Cork City, and it was kind of an annual thing. There wasn't live animals in it, but it was nice. Like, we liked it.
Well, it wasn't the same crib then that Micheál Martin was brought to, because Micheál Martin, I know, was giving a press conference earlier this week. You were there. and he spoke very highly of his memories of a crib. For, we should probably rewind back a little bit and say...
So where is the controversy rooted?
So the controversy is going is that there has been since 1995 a live animal crib outside of the Mansion House in Dublin for every year. And there's a sheep there, there's a donkey there, there's a goat there, I think. And then there's the usual nativity scene where you have the three wise men and Jesus and Mary and Joseph. And the Lord Mayor this year in Dublin, Caroline Conroy of the Green Party, has decided that she just does not want to have it there, that she has a little bit of an issue with the idea of animals being bussed in literally day in, day out to be there for humans to go and have a gawk at. And they are, by the way, bussed in day out. They literally brought from a family in Wicklow. They're there from 9 till 6. Yeah. They're brought off at 6
not
o'clock.
Not dissimilar to what we saw over the summer with the Puck Fair.
No, indeed.
A million miles off that.
But maybe it is in light of, although it's slightly
the Puck Fair had the whole
different extreme heat.
And
yeah. But that the Lord Mayor has decided that she's a little uneasy about animals being traipsed in just for the gratification of humans to go and have a little point and a giggle at, and has decided not to have it. And you would think people would go, oh, that's a shame, or maybe can we find someone somewhere else? There's been a real culture wars element to how everything has suddenly emerged since, where you have like the party press office, like the national headquarters of government parties, now like sending out dueling press releases rowing about whether it's appropriate for there to be a live animal crib outside the Mansion House. And there's a bit of me, which we're feeding the monster now by talking about it on the podcast, but you not have other things to be worrying about, lads.
Well, they do, but they love a distraction tactic, and they love a story that everyone can kind of get a little bit personally invested in. So as you mentioned, the Taoiseach was out speaking about loads of really like deep, important issues, and then towards the end of the press conference, and we'll get to one of the other issues he spoke about this week, but towards the end of that doorstep, he was asked about this. He kind of laughed, and he also suggested that this type of decision was above his pay grade.
Well, I've enjoyed Christmases in the past where we visited live animals, I could say that, and they were well looked after. It was Father James up in Ballyvillan. I remember it well many years ago when we brought the kids up to see the live animals. But look, we have all different perspectives and so on like that, and people will have a variety of ways to enjoy Christmas.
But do you think the Lord Mayor should...
But I think this is beyond my pay grade. Yeah.
I think you have to help them.
Okay, sorry.
Above his pay grade is just a polite way of him saying that I don't want to have to take a side because I'm going to be a loser either way. It's such a cop-out.
He did kind of take a side when you think about it. Like, he did say he loved a bit of livestock in a crib. He enjoyed going to see it. So, I mean, he's not taking a side, but he's also not taking
I mean, you can understand I wanted to be a little bit evasive, but at the same time, a Taoiseach saying something is above his pay grade when literally by definition, nothing is above his pay grade. Like, it's a curious one. This was a media op that the Taoiseach undertook while he was dealing with one of the other bigger stories that you were also covering, which is the ongoing housing difficulties in Ireland and the small thing happening this week, which was hoping to address that in its own way.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things, I suppose, this week as well, Gavin, in relation to, so he was opening 65 new housing units at a Clúid housing project in Mulhuddard in West Dublin. So, you know, he got a chance to meet some of the families that were living there. So, for example, there was a family, a couple and their two kids who have been moved into the new house, and the Taoiseach goes in and meets the kids and everything, lovely photo op of this beautiful brand new built house, very, very nice. And of course, you know, the government saying this is a symbol of how great Housing for All is, and we're really flying and look at how great it is for this family. And so we go to the interview with the Taoiseach afterwards, and I just sort of said, oh, you met this family, like that's brilliant. Can you just tell us a bit about like how long they were waiting for a house, or, you know, and he sort of was like, we didn't really get into their backstory, but they're delighted to have their new house. I thought, oh, okay. And then I popped around to the house afterwards and just rang the doorbell and said, hi, would you mind chatting to us for the news? And I'd love to chat to you about like how you got here. And when you sat down with the family, the truth was they'd actually been on the waiting list for 14 years to get
14 years,
and they had spent a lot of that time in emergency accommodation, living in a hotel room with their kids. So don't get me wrong, it's obviously a really positive and happy experience to have finally gotten their own home, but I just thought it was interesting that like on days like that sometimes, you know, I the government ministers don't ask that question of like, actually, you know, how long did it take you to get here? And I think the fact that they spent 14 years on the waiting list is like damning indictment of how broken our system is. But, and they acknowledge, by the way, that they are among the lucky ones, because remember that last week we saw a record number of people, and this is figures from the Department of Housing, are now living in emergency accommodation, up to 11,000 people. So, like, you know, opening 65 new housing units is obviously a positive thing, but when you have 11,000 people living in emergency accommodation, it really symbolises the gap between, you know, this and reality.
Well, the very fact that the Taoiseach didn't know their circumstances is kind of curious because either they were chosen for basically the photo op on the basis that they were among the hardest cases and the government wanted to feel like it was addressing that and wanted it to be known, but yet nobody told the Taoiseach, or what is possibly more worrying is that it is now standard practice or standard circumstances to be on the list for 14 years. And I know that when they spoke to you afterwards, talking about how like their children were born while they were still living in emergency
accommodation. Yeah, the youngest child was born, at a time when they... So the youngest child spent his first couple of months of his life living in a hotel room in emergency accommodation. Now, like, they're a gorgeous family and they're so delighted and they're, like, two very hardworking individuals and they're so excited to have their own home now. But both of them do recognise the struggle that it took to get there and that it was 14 years. And they also recognise, as I said, that thousands of other families are in that situation. So I just thought it was an interesting one yesterday just to see, you know, sometimes you look at the photographs of these photo ops, but actually I think it's really important to ask the question behind that is, how did we get to this point and how, like, what was the people's backstory around that? So anyway, that was just something that I picked up on yesterday that I thought was interesting to talk about in terms of just, especially at a time when we have such a record number of people in emergency accommodation. Also, just really quickly before we go on this, I wanted to talk to you about the tensions or the sort of alleged tensions. I mean, obviously you're at the Pall Court, but I mean, this kind of, was there sort of slapping on the wrist going on between sort of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Green Party? Like, they're getting to the final stages before the changeover, Gav. Yeah. So is it a little bit...
There's a touch of that where, because now that the budget is done and dusted, basically it's all eyes on the reshuffle and a little bit of jockeying because every minister is to some degree nervous about either getting to stay where they are or getting put into another department where they have to learn the ropes all over again, or worse, getting dropped from cabinet altogether. I don't know if we have time to play the clip, but I know that it was fascinating that
I want to get to this clip because it's let's
very quickly then insert the clip
for
which
context
is,
before we get to the clip. I just want to say, so this is the Taoiseach obviously again at that event this week. Roger O'Gorman from the Green Party, who's obviously Green Party Minister, was at the event as well because he's from Dublin West,
yes,
and had been there for the entire press conference, but sort of towards the end had to leave, and it was kind of, the question was asked, well, has he left because this sort of an awkwardness or a tension between the coalition partners? And here's what Micheál Martin had to say.
Just ask you, how is the relationship between yourself and your coalition pals? Are you getting on well now?
We're getting
on. Mr. O'Gorman had to leave suddenly there. That wasn't, I think, to do with the friendship or anything, was it?
I'd say it's a fair question you were going to ask him. I jest. But no, the relationship
is
very
relationship?
Positive.
I mean, is there a bit of backbiting going on between the parties?
Look, can I just calm you all down? Much and all, as you'd like a story on this one. The relationships are good between the three party leaders, is the first thing I would say, in respect of some reports. There was no rebuking going on. I think that's contextually, the remarks are taken out of context. I would argue very strongly on that, in the sense that any team that goes out on the pitch, you play as a team. That's just a general commentary I would make and have consistently made since this government started. There's enough in the opposition having a go at us.
Of course, the awkward thing about the timing of his departure was that that was at the time when people wanted to start asking questions about housing for Ukrainian refugees, which is his
and
actual
the crib,
brief.
Actually. And the crib, which is also a Green Party.
Walking away from the Green Party issue,
timing.
That often happens where they have to go off and do something else because it's a constituency TD. But it is remarkable. And you're going to see an awful lot more of that sort of caginess about ministers in the coming weeks because there's the reshuffle coming up. And then, of course, there's also, let's not forget, there's the arithmetic of the Dáil having to vote on whether Leo Varadkar can be Taoiseach. And if you have a lot of people inside, and now in the case of Martin McSherry, outside political parties who are a little bit unhappy about that, then I think you can see a lot of a little bit of anxiety creeping into discourse in the weeks to come, I suspect. It's been a fascinating week to be an extremely online person, as we all are in our own ways, not least because there was that moment where we all couldn't be online because Instagram went down for a few hours on Monday, but also because as three people around a virtual table, and let's all be honest, we all have blue ticks and they're a weird status symbol in our kind of line of work. But Elon Musk's apparent war on the method of blue ticking and proposing to charge people like us, frankly, for the access to the platform that we currently provide for free is interesting. One thing which I find fascinating about the whole thing, Rich, is that I'm no longer sure that Elon Musk actually rather is some sort of genius businessman, because he seems to have spent $44 billion on a product that he has absolutely no idea what to do with next.
It reminds me of the scene in The Simpsons where Homer is the union boss and he's negotiating with Mr. Burns and about the dental plan and all that sort of stuff. He starts spinning around on the ground going whoop, 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 whoop. I think Mr. Burns says that maybe he's not the master negotiator that we thought he was. That's kind of what it reminds me of. So, like, there are clearly, like, plans which did not exist for how things would go once he took over. He let a load of staff go. And he seems to be just spitballing and throwing, you know, darts at a wall and seeing what sticks about the verification, you know, plan and Twitter Blue and, you know, paying for your blue tick. Gav, would you pay for a blue tick?
Would you not just leave Twitter?
I certainly wouldn't leave Twitter because I mean this is a really sad thing to concede. Go on, Richard.
If I know anybody who actually pays out of their own pocket for a blue tick, I'm real life unfriending them. Not unfollowing them, unfriending them on Instagram. I am real life unfriending them.
Well,
that is absolutely pathetic behavior. If your company pays for it, absolutely that's fine.
You just managed to put some glue back in the group chat there because I was about to be like, well, that's it now. That's the end of the project. I'm off. Goodbye, everyone. You see, the thing is, I don't think I'd pay for a blue tick as a status symbol. I think I would pay if Twitter Blue, which is for people who don't know, is a subscription service by which
And what's the proposal?
So Twitter Blue, as it stands right now, is a paid level of additional service that you can get in only certain countries.
That doesn't exist right now.
Not in Ireland. No. It does exist in the United States and a few other small markets. It includes the edit button and a few other features that you don't get as a regular user. Like you can embed newsletters and you have easier embedding of content and stuff. So it's a little bit more premium. And if it were a case of, you know, offering that worldwide for people who are heavy users like me, I probably would pay a fiver or a tenner a month for it. Although it's interesting that Elon was pitching 20. Stephen King, the horror writer, writes back to him and says, I'm not paying $20 for that. And Elon goes, how about 8? Which is fascinating because you don't think that the world's richest man is going to make money from
he's like literally haggling.
Like virtually holding out like a cap to like a horror writer on Twitter being like, how much will you pay for this product? But that's one thing. It's tying in the blue tick and the verification and that to this idea of having a paid level of extra service.
Mm.
I just kind of find very curious because if you remember why the blue tick exists in the first place, it's so that when somebody is posting and they're calling themselves Micheál Martin TD or Leo Varadkar or News Chambers or Zara King or Gav Riley, that they are who they say they are and not someone else. And I'm not sure that all of those people would pay $8 or $20 a month for that privilege. And I don't know, Richard, how you feel about that.
I don't think you should. I don't think you should play along with this game. Like, you're verified. If you're verified for, you know, because you're a politician or a public figure or a journalist, it's there because of that. It's not because you've paid a couple of quid every month towards Elon Musk and his revenue-making stream. I think the most interesting thing about Twitter since Elon Musk did take over is how, and it actually ties into why I'm here, is the level of disinformation actors, conspiracists, really, who have rallied around the fact that Elon Musk has taken over Twitter. Mm. There's been a huge rise in hate speech reported in the US on Twitter, in particular anti-Semitic speech and uses of the N-word, which people like LeBron James were calling out, really, even though the content moderation rules actually haven't changed yet.
And that's
Elon
quite an important point, isn't it? That the rules haven't changed and people just do feel more emboldened about it. Literally nothing has changed, but it seems like it's this bat signal for people to act a little bit more out of the bounds of what's considered appropriate behaviour.
Well, absolutely. And I, for one, absolutely will not be paying for a blue tick on Twitter because I'm barely hanging. I am barely hanging on to Twitter by a thread as it stands. I cannot stand the platform at this point.
It's a horrible kip at the best of times, and it's worse of a kip now. And actually, it's interesting that Elon Musk says that, we're going to be, it won't be the Wild West, he says, and yet he tweets conspiracy theories about what happened to Paul Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi's husband, before deleting it later. Again, it just turns to a complete chaos and a lawlessness, really, that there is existing in Twitter. And it kind of exists across social media as well, because I noticed there the other day a congressional, I'm just gonna look over my shoulder, make sure I don't upset anybody saying this, but there was a congresswoman from Virginia who people, or from Georgia I should say, called Marjorie Taylor Greene, who people might have come across as perhaps one of the most extreme people in parliament in any democracy around the world. And she posted up a video on Instagram. I'm not going to tell you the content of it because I'm actually not sure about the legal groundings for us even repeating it. But the fact that it's still up there on Instagram is profoundly shocking to me.
Yeah.
It contains basically allegations against the US President Joe Biden. But the fact is that, like, nobody has ever gotten a hold of hate speech as a social network, whether that be Facebook, it be TikTok, which I'm actually baffled anytime I'm onto TikTok about the level of misinformation and hate speech on there. Twitter has always been a cesspool. Facebook and Instagram are pretty terrible as well. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows what Facebook did in referendums like Brexit as well as the US presidential election. So I just don't think that any of them have a thing. I think it's time for a full ground up reset of the social sphere.
Yeah.
I don't know who's with me on that rallying call.
Well, we did have this conversation in our group chat the other day and we were talking about this and we were saying that, like, I suppose the thing about it is, though, like, user behavior is a big factor in all of this. So, like, you know, even if you were to, like, rid the world of the current social media platforms, like, you know, even if a new one started tomorrow, like, user behavior would still be a contributing factor to how the whole entire experience would play out. But yeah, you're right in terms of the fact that, like, they have to have social responsibility, the actual platforms themselves. And, like, how many times have all of us reported, you know, tweets or Instagram posts or things that, like, are clearly in violation of, like, someone's, you know, basic right to their good name, and like, you've gotten back, this doesn't violate our community, and you're like, really?
Yeah, like that is like the one of the more bizarre things about it, because like, we are like, not to get at the world's smallest fiddle, because you know, we kind of exist in public life whether we like it or not,
which is totally fine.
But that, like, we are like all like routinely libeled like a lot of days for like day in day out for the last
or
couple of years
online,
yeah, because people just think that we are agents of misinformation because of the approach that we've taken to the big story whose name we shall not bother repeating this deep into the podcast, and like routinely being, you know, just having good names tarred by that in manners that you wouldn't be allowed to do in any other medium. But the thing about it though, Richard, is that there seems to be this tension where big social platforms consider themselves to be the medium, not the publisher. So where Virgin Media Television couldn't broadcast something like the Marjorie Taylor Greene allegation that you just mentioned right now, that they can get away with it because they don't see themselves as the publisher. They just see themselves as the means through which you get it.
Pretty much. But like, I mean, there has been political arguments, and without getting into them, about, you know, how do we, is it not worth regulating who owns social networks? Is it not worth considering whether or not it is wise to allow, you know, your Facebook and Instagram to be controlled by one dude, Mark Zuckerberg, to allow Twitter be controlled by Elon Musk, powerful people of huge influence, and, you know, who have, of course, their own political perspectives and their own views on how things should be moderated. Should that not be opened up a little bit more so that we make sure that, you know, people are protected, that they aren't, you know, victimized and abused? I would say so, potentially, that's something that should be looked at. But it doesn't seem to be, like, nobody seems to really want to tackle it. I think that there is a fear that people will be seen as anti-business or anti, you know, free speech or whatever. And that's difficult line to, well, it's kicking off here behind
it's
me.
It's all kicking off behind here.
Which means that we'll let you go then and go talk to Herschel Walker in just a minute. Zara, come in.
Well, I was just going to say, just obviously on Monday, Instagram had that issue where people were losing their accounts on Monday, and there was an awful lot of people losing followers and things like that. And Instagram came out at the time and said that they were aware that some people were having issues accessing their accounts, said they were looking into it and apologised. They then went on to say they resolved the bug and it was causing people in different parts of the world to have issues accessing accounts. What was interesting and what we talked about at the time on Monday, and it's worth discussing on the podcast today, is that a lot of people who like rely on their income wholeheartedly from the likes of Instagram were certainly panicking. There were people who had, you know, once had a million followers who found themselves kind of back at the sort of 800,000 mark, and they're relying on those statistics, they're relying on those insights to literally pay their mortgage. You know, that a lot of people are running their businesses through social media channels, and like any sort of a glitch like this in the system, it just goes to show how sort of potentially flimsical the system is, that it's so quick that it can go offline and all of a sudden your livelihood is gone.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that's something which, you know, you need to look at, is how, when there's a small, slight glitch on any of these things, that they have fairly profound implications. I mean, even if you look at WhatsApp, which isn't strictly a social network, but is a messaging platform owned by the same guy who owns a number of other social networks. Look at what happens when WhatsApp goes down. You have literal political chaos in terms of, you know, what happened in the UK when they were deciding, you know, who was getting cabinet positions. It happens to us. It's very hard to run a newsroom without WhatsApp. It's very hard to organise a house and who's putting out the bins and all that sort of stuff without WhatsApp. So I just think that they're really, you know, it's mad how dependent we become on these things. And it probably is something which is worth a little bit of self-reflection by all of us, and maybe a little bit more pertinent reflection in terms of how much we, you know, we singularize power in these very, very, you know, small individual apps, really, which have a huge, huge reach.
Says the three people who named their podcast, the group chat.
Yeah, well, now I'm also wondering, is there previous where, like, one of you forgot to put out the bin
That's
in the house that you used to
are.
Share? because the WhatsApp group went down once upon a time. I think it is worth just kind of reflecting on that, though, because, like, when was the last time that either of you went to the homepage of a news website? Like, it's not something which is often done anymore, because you're often following a social link which has been posted somewhere.
Yeah.
And if that network changes the way that it shows that content, or, you know, if it's Facebook and they decide to change the algorithm so that you see more content from your friends rather than from particular brands or publishers, then, like, if you're a small publisher, that can completely kill you off. And it's just mad to think that some people's incomes are so precarious that all it takes is one engineer tweaking an algorithm and suddenly then you plummet and your advertisements are worth nothing. and that's your business gone just because some social engineer in the other part of the world decided that they wanted to tweak how someone's newsfeed reads, which is a little bit wild. Richard, I get the sense that you are now looking over your shoulder with increasing concern about Herschel Walker's supporters and what they're getting up to, and whether you need to go on back and do your day job.
We'll see. I'm just interested in what's happening because there's a fairly energised crowd and you're seeing a lot of flags and stuff like that and some interesting people.
Are you able to stick around?
News.
We've got a big chat about Matt Hancock coming up.
Let's see how we go. I want to get into Matt Hancock.
Yeah, you may or may not be here after the break. Stay tuned.
Okay, Richard is still here. For just a moment. Herschel Walker is calling any moment, so he might just disappear. But we wanted to keep you online because we wanted Richard to give us his take on the fact that the man who held the position equivalent to Simon Harris or Stephen Donnelly in the middle of a major global pandemic and who was responsible for massive policy successes and failures, massive procurement successes and failures, who was responsible, arguably, for the death of tens of thousands of people in the United Kingdom, is now going to be eating kangaroo testes in an Australian jungle for all of our amusement on television.
This face.
Well, it's just another example of how the mighty have fallen as a country, as a political class of a country, that this was the path for one of the holders of the great office of state in the United Kingdom to go down. People might have last seen Matt Hancock when he was standing outside Conservative Party headquarters getting sandbagged for a handshake by Rishi Sunak. And now he has decided, well, there ain't no future for me in this politics. I am going to the Bush Tucker trials. It is a deeply symptomatic of an unserious country in an unserious times. I look forward to seeing how he gets on alongside Boy George, Mike Tyndall. I don't know who else is confirmed for that show.
I actually didn't recognise a lot of the other names when I was cycling through the video yesterday. That's not to say that it won't be fabulous content on Virgin Media 1 at 9 o'clock weeknights
times
to come.
What's interesting is, though, to listen to the Vox Pops from his constituency in West Suffolk on the BBC, like one man coming on saying, well, like, we lost our local bus service and he didn't come to the meeting last week when we lost the local bus service. So he can't come as far as the meeting on the bus service, but he can make his way out to the jungle in Australia. I think it kind of speaks volumes, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is worth, of course, staying for listeners and viewers who don't keep up with these things, that he has now been suspended from the Conservative Parliamentary Party because he's basically leaving Parliament.
As Richard said, like, Rishi totally snubbed him outside Conservative Party HQ. But, like, he was never really, like, he was never going to make the comeback.
Well, then you wonder, actually, was he standing outside Tory HQ secretly delighted that he didn't get a handshake? Because not only is he doing all of this as well, but he's also got his pandemic diaries, which are due to be published, I think, the first week of December. Everyone's favourite Christmas read, How a Man Dealt with a Pandemic. That's going to be a rock and roll read, I'm sure. Would you then secretly hope that he didn't end up in cabinet?
Exactly. I mean, he was standing outside Conservative HQ to get on camera. He's gone on this campaign to try and repair his image, which is very hard to repair given the circumstances of what happened. But it is something which seems to happen a lot more in UK politics. Again, I'm just looking over my shoulder here. Didn't Stanley Johnson appear on one of these reality shows?
Yeah, he
Penny
did.
Penny Mordaunt, who has a current cabinet minister, appeared on Splash, the diving show, which was described by, I think it was The Observer, as the worst television show in the history of the medium.
Nadine
Dorries,
did,
I think,
Strictly.
Also appeared.
And she did.
Edwina Curry, yeah. Of course,
Ed Balls did Strictly, although not as an MP.
Ed Balls did.
But, I mean, all of that, though, often not when they were still serving in Parliament. The guy's basically taking 3 weeks off a highly remunerated job to go and disappear into the Australian jungle, where he is going to be made to do every single Bush Tucker trial. Like, they mightn't even bother having the phone in votes now. You know, when the banner comes up at the bottom of the screen, it's being like, oh, you can't vote in the Republic of Ireland. No point voting. Matt Hancock is going to be doing all of them. All of the people who have any emotional investment in someone who died and who maybe died unnecessarily
in 2020. Here's the thing that kind of bothers me a small bit, right? Is that, like, I know we're going back to all politics is local, right? So the local bus service is gone, right, where he's from. Mm. And this man is too busy worrying about his own reputation. And, like, you're right, he will get voted to do all the trials. And then what'll probably happen is, unfortunately, he'll endear himself to people because he'll be perceived as being good crack. And this is actually a really good roll of the dice for him. I would predict that he may end up winning I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. I'm calling it. Okay. I think a lot of people think he'll be the first one out, but I don't know.
I have that bet with you, Zara. Yeah. I have that bet with you. I have that bet. I don't think he'll win. I think he'll do better than people think.
But I think he will as well.
The role of reality television, I think being here is actually probably one of the most profound things, one of the most sense, you know, it raises questions about that. Like, all of these people here behind me, they're heroes, Donald Trump. And you ask a lot of them why they voted for Donald Trump. Initially, they said that he ran businesses, and they saw him run businesses. And where did they see that? They saw that in The Apprentice, which was a reality show, which papered over a lot of the cracks of bankruptcies and whatnot.
Yeah.
So these things can often have unintended consequences. We actually have to run here, guys.
I think
we're going to have to wade through all these pickup trucks and American flags. And we're going to hop in there. And if I survive and I can come back next week, I will gladly fill you in on my adventures with Herschel Walker and co.
Okay, Richard, okay, go. Thank you very much for joining us in this week's group chat.
He's
gone. I sort of like, though, that we've left on a moment of tension, because now he's taken on that bet with you as to whether Matt Hancock is going to be the king of the jungle. Because
let's watch this.
There's a little bit of me that thinks that the British public are actually so vindictive about some of what went on during the pandemic when he was Secretary of State. We should state again for people who didn't know that there's every chance he gets voted through until the very final leg, and then he loses to your one from Corrie or whoever it is, or Mike Tindall or someone else who's probably been on Strictly as well, that they will carry him through right to the end and not make him King of the Jungle.
We haven't even really touched on the affair and everything. People were quite horrified by that as well. I mean, at a time when he was telling people to social distance, he certainly wasn't.
Well, you probably could have argued that was his household at the time, just that the rest of his actual blood family didn't know about it.
Yeah.
But isn't it like, it's mad to think though, like what would be a comparable situation that it would be?
It would be like Stephen Donnelly, I guess, going into the jungle.
Well, Stephen Donnelly going, or some other comparable Irish format, Stephen Donnelly going on like Cabin Fever or something, which actually, come to think of it, Senator Mark Daly, now the Kirlik of the Shannon.
A reality show, and Michael Healy rated it, and it was like on an island off the west coast of Ireland.
That was the one that led to the controversy about all the phone.
French was on that as well at the time.
Was that the one that led to the controversy about all the phone calls being made from Leinster House to vote for Michael Healy Ray? And this at the time when his father, the late Jackie Healy Ray, was a TD, and he of course denied
that
all the phone calls.
That I don't know.
came from his account. But it, like, it's just a bizarre world to think that a guy who, you know, it's also mad to think that he could have been possibly had another job in Rishi Sunak's cabinet and still have been out there doing a book tour, flogging, you know, a book that tells all about the not so good moments he had the last time that he had a job in cabinet.
But that's the problem as well. Like, he's being paid by the taxpayer to go out and basically relaunch his celebrity career. And even the word celebrity actually to describe politician is a little bit touch and go.
He says that he's doing it to draw attention to some of his work in the health portfolio about, I think it's mental health, but possibly some other areas of which that he now considers to be passion projects, and which he will be trying to draw attention to. How he proposes to do that while eating kangaroo testes in a jungle with barely sautéed rice, I'm not so sure, but you can catch all of it, I'm sure, on Virgin Media One in the weeks to come. You can see him do all of the Bush Tucker trials. We had better go. Thank you in absentia, Richards and Herschel Walker in Georgia. Thank you, Zara King.
Thank you, Gavin Riley.
Thank you for watching or listening. Don't forget to leave a rating and set your series link, all the usual things that you do for a podcast, and set your series link for Wednesday nights now on Virgin Media 2. And other than that, we will talk to you again next week.
See you next week.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.